President Trump has shown his willingness to back challengers to GOP incumbents who disagree with him or his administration. And politicians like Kentucky Congressman Thomas Massie have seen how powerful the Trump endorsement can be. But with fewer primary elections hanging over their heads, are more Republicans in Congress feeling emboldened to vote against the president? This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to discuss the state of Congress and the issues that could affect the midterm elections are Fox News Chief Congressional Correspondent Chad Pergram. Welcome back, Chad.
Hi there. Good to be on with you.
Great to have you. And University of Cincinnati Professor of Political Science, David Niven. Welcome back to you, David.
Always a pleasure.
Chad, how would you describe the current relationship between the Republican majority in Congress and President Trump?
You know, there are still a lot of acolytes of President Trump on Capitol Hill, but it's not quite what it was. And let me start with the relationship between the president and the Senate Majority Leader John Thune. It seems that Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House, he gets the calls from the president these days, not John Thune. And while John Thune has tried to do the president's bidding on a host of issues, he doesn't seem to be pleasing him. The president has not torn into Thune just yet the way he used to turn on Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader, former Senate Majority Leader from Kentucky when he was in office. But he has called on him to fire the parliamentarian, get rid of the filibuster. The latest push here is
Something happened to your audio there, Chad.
To FISA, which is this now semi-dark intelligence program to help, combat terrorism. And the two are kind of linked. And they thought they had figured out FISA just a couple of days ago, right before it went dark. And now, guess what? They've got a problem if the president wants that. So the relationships between Thune and the president are not great. But they have devolved inside the Senate Republican Conference because there's a lot of Republican senators who are upset at the president over him picking others besides John Cornyn from Texas and also Bill Cassidy, the Republican senator from Louisiana, in the primaries. That's cost him political capital here on Capitol Hill among Republicans.
Chad, I want to back up just a minute because we had a problem. Your audio cut out in the middle of what you were saying. When you picked up again, you were talking about FISA and this connection that the president wants. I believe you were talking about a connection between FISA and the Save America.
That's right.
Talk about that a little bit?
Exactly. So FISA is this anti-terrorism program, and the congressional authorization for it expired on Friday night. They can still do the investigations, but the question is whether or not telecommunications companies will provide the information to the intel community without that congressional authorization. Well, they had a very fragile bipartisan agreement worked out a couple of weeks ago. The president then kind of pulverized that by announcing that Bill Pulte, who was the housing czar, for lack of a better term, was going to become the acting director of national intelligence after Tulsi Gabbard stepped down. Well, then that was just a bridge too far for Democrats. They thought that, you know, he would be abusive in that position. He would abuse his power. He didn't have any experience in intelligence. So then last week, right as the Senate was leaving, he announced that Jay Clayton would be nominated to be the DNI. And so Democrats are like, OK, if we can have a quick confirmation of Jay Clayton, and there's not many who will support him, but some will confirm him, then we can go back and, you know, put the genie back in the bottle and pass FISA. That requires this bipartisan coalition. There's enough Republicans who are against it who they can't pass it on their own. So they need Democratic votes. Well, then over the weekend, the president said, I only want FISA renewed if it is attached to the Save America Act. Now, you know, they tried on this for a couple of weeks back in the spring. It just wasn't going anywhere. It doesn't have 60 votes. It's popular among the Republican base, but they've had two test votes that never got to, you know, more than 50 votes. So they can't even, you know, get to a simple majority in the Senate. So that might be another problem in the Senate as we're at this very vulnerable time with America 250 and the World Cup and still the conflict with Iran.
David, talk to us about the Save America Act. We've talked about that on a show before, but remind us what that's all about.
But you're talking about a massive federal imposition on the election process to make it harder to register, harder to vote, harder to have your vote counted. And, you know, it really is an extraordinary move and very much in conflict with hundreds of years of American electoral law. And, you know, I think as you just heard Chad say, there's less than a clear working Republican majority for it. And yet it keeps coming back into the conversation, even as it has failed to, you know, survive the legislative process. And I do think it's interesting to think about trying to pair two things that are each dicey in their own right and make them into one, you know, which really does kind of embody the Trump approach to legislating. It's not exactly four-dimensional chess strategy here. It's really banging on things and waiting for things to happen.
We're talking about the state of Congress and the issues that could affect the midterm elections. Do you have questions or comments? Call 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. Chad, you were just talking about the appointment of Bill Pulte as acting director of national intelligence and how that really, the impact that had on Congress and the concerns that members of Congress raised. Some members of Congress were also very upset about this nearly $1.8 billion anti-weaponization fund that the president and his administration proposed. Talk to us about that and how that has ended up shaking out.
Well, there have been two instances in recent weeks where the president has kind of managed to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory legislatively. A couple of weeks ago, they were on the precipice in the Senate of passing what the president had wanted, the last bastion of funding from last fall's government shutdown, money for Border Patrol and ICE. And then the word came out about this, weaponization fund. Todd Blanche was appearing on Capitol Hill, was hammered about that. He was asked questions about that at a special briefing. And you had Republican senators leaving this lunch when they were supposed to pass that bill in the next 24 hours or so. This is a few weeks ago, just not even wanting to talk because they were going to try to amend it themselves to protect themselves, saying, you know, we can't sign off on this, Mr. President. There were a few Republicans loyal to the president who were for it, but most were not. So they finally were able to kind of put that by the wayside after a while. Blanche had indicated in a House hearing, he said that, you know, this is dead now. There are still some Republicans. In fact, there's a test vote in the Senate today to kind of, you know, put Republicans on the record about that here. To, you know, Democrats are taking this as a win, you know, to, you know, politically looking toward the midterms to say, OK, can we say that, you know, he's trying to protect himself. He's trying to protect his loyalists. So, you know, that's two instances. I mentioned what happened with FISA a couple of weeks ago. I mentioned what happened a few weeks before with that. And Todd Blanche has been making the rounds here on Capitol Hill. He's now nominated the acting attorney general to be the attorney general. I think it's going to be very hard to get him out of committee, let alone confirmed on the floor, because of reservations about this weaponization fund. He used to be the president's personal attorney. And some senators on both sides, even Republicans, believe he is still acting in the capacity as the president's personal attorney. And that might make it tough to confirm him.
Well, David, then there's the war in Iran. And President Trump announced a peace deal that's supposed to be signed later this week. But how have Republican members of Congress been reacting to this military conflict and its impact since it started in the U.S.?
Well, you know, you see an awful lot of members, you know, supporting this in the abstract, but not really wanting to go that far down the road with it. And of course, Trump lost a key vote in the House where a majority, you know, voted against him. Now, that was every Democrat and just a handful of Republicans voting against him, but nonetheless, a sign of weakness that they couldn't hold the party line together. And, you know, locally, Warren Davidson was among those Republicans voting against Trump's position. Thomas Massie, of course, on the other side of the river, was among the Republicans voting against the president's position. You know, it's an interesting situation where Congress has deferred so much to Trump in this term, repeatedly allowing an assertion of presidential authority that's unprecedented in American history. But yet what Trump's response to that is of course, to ask for even more. And at some point, and I think, you know, Senator John Cornyn, who just lost the primary in Texas, you know, has talked about this revelation in his own world that, you know, he's voted with Trump almost all the time. He put the number at 98%, and it wasn't sufficient to maintain his status in Trump's good graces. And I think, you know, one of the things you're seeing in these votes that Trump is losing is a handful of folks coming to that realization that, you know, their options are to do exactly as they're told, you know, which makes for a rather uninspiring bit of representation, or to cast the occasional independent vote, you know, and watch the kind of political apparatus, you know, target them.
Chad, David just mentioned Ohio Congressman Warren Davidson. He was one of the four Republicans who voted for a resolution ordering the end to the military action in Iran. President Trump lashed out at those Republicans after that vote. Do you think Congressman Davidson could face consequences from the president for that vote?
Well, you know, Warren Davidson is somebody who tends to speak his mind. There was a time where, you know, he told me just a couple of years ago that he thought his vote for Mike Johnson as Speaker of the House was one of the worst votes that he had taken. You know, so he's somebody kind of like Thomas Massie, who's not afraid to buck his party. We've not seen the president go after Davidson as much. I mean, he did say, you know, he did condemn these guys. But for instance, Lauren Boebert, the Republican representative from Colorado, came and campaigned for Thomas Massie. And he said, I think that she ought to, you know, lose her primary, even though she's going to have to wait till next cycle for that. You know, we're in such a volatile political climate, and we'll have to see what kind of juice the president has next time around. Remember that he will be a lame duck. He'll be leaving. Is he the person who's going to be able to call the shots on that? Or, you know, we've had other people like Tom Tillis, the Republican senator from North Carolina, who's departing. Some of these folks are willing to, you know, say whatever they want. John Cornyn has been a little bit liberated here. The same with Bill Cassidy, who supported a procedural vote on Iran. It kind of reminds me, and I wrote a blog about this a few weeks ago on the Fox News website. I remember on the Mr. Rogers show, there was the character Lady Elaine Fairchild. And she had this boomerang, and she would utter the phrase boomerang, tumerang, sumerang, and the entire neighborhood would turn upside down on Mr. Rogers' show. It's kind of the same thing. These guys right now, because the margins are so slim in the House and Senate that it doesn't take much to somebody utter some incantation, and it turns the entire congressional caucus upside down because of those margins. And we've seen a little bit of that from Cassidy and Cornyn, and we've seen it a long time now from Thomas Massie, mostly in the House of Representatives, because that margin continues to be so tight over there.
Well, Chad, now that there are fewer primary races ahead, do you think more Republican members of Congress will be willing to vote against what the president wants if they disagree with him?
Well, the question now is, what else are they really going to vote on? I mean, I look at this calendar right now. The House is out right now. They are getting close to almost being done. Really, the only thing they kind of have to do the rest of the year is fund the government. There is a push on the Republican side of the aisle to push what's being billed as Reconciliation 3.0, which is kind of a version of the big, beautiful bill last year. In some form, it would deal with health care and tax cuts and probably, you know, plus up the military with all the munitions that have been spent in Iran. But nobody can tell you exactly what it is. Nobody can tell you exactly what the path to passage is. And they're running out of track. And there is a working theory at the Capitol that if they try to knock out maybe a couple of appropriations bills in the House and see that the Senate isn't doing anything, they cry uncle and send everybody home. And then that puts us on a glide path to a government shutdown in the fall. So in terms of actual votes that matter, we might not be down to much for the rest of the year before the midterms, believe it or not, even though it is still only the middle of June.
David, another government shutdown, the specter of that, what kind of impact do you think that could have on the American people?
That would be, politically speaking, you know, pouring gasoline on the fire. You know, there's no way that Republicans can politically tolerate a shutdown and a war and gas prices and inflation and the litany. You know, Republicans are already facing modest expectations in this midterm election, and there's a point at which, you know, they'll have to go into survival strategy. And, you know, a prolonged shutdown would just be one more on the list of, you know, things that this Republican Congress and this Republican president failed to get done for the American people. It really does send a, you know, a message of weakness, which is exactly the opposite you want to do in a campaign year, especially when, as you know, Chad noted, they'll largely be on vacation, you know, in terms of actually serving in Congress for most of the time between now and November.
And can I add something there? You know, it's funny that the Democrats kind of hold the cards on a potential sure. government shutdown here. You need 60 votes to break a filibuster. Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House, he sent basically the entire House home during the entire comprehensive 43 government day government shutdown last fall. The Democrats, people say, well, why would you have a government shutdown right before the fall? The Democrats might view it, you know, politically advantageous. And even though they might be here, they might view being in Washington during a government shutdown as the political equivalent of being back home and campaigning in this particular legislative and political environment.
Well, we will continue our conversation after a short break. And later in the program, the newly approved active ingredient for sunscreen in the U.S. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're back with our conversation about the state of Congress and the issues that could affect the midterm elections. My guests are University of Cincinnati Professor of Political Science David Niven and Fox News Chief Congressional Correspondent Chad Pergram. You can join the conversation. Call 513-419-7100 or you can email talk@wvxu.org. You know, before the break, we were talking about the war in Iran, this vote on FISA, you know, a potential government shutdown looming, so much going on. And David, at the same time all this is happening, there have been reports that President Trump wants passage of a resolution to symbolically nullify his two impeachments. What does that say to you about the president's priorities?
Well, this is a real problem that he's creating for Congress in asking for, you know, essentially the wrapping on the package and ignoring what's in the package. So ignoring sort of day-to-day priorities of the American people and asking Congress to think about rewriting history for him, or ignoring, you know, the day-to-day struggles of Americans and asking for a billion-dollar ballroom. You know, these are really, really politically self-inflicted wounds. And, you know, a normal operating political person would hesitate to even think about these things, you know, much less pursue them. You know, but this is the price that Trump imposes on his party's members of Congress, you know, to always do more. And I think the rewriting of history and trying to erase impeachments is not a real thing. You know, there is no congressional authority to rewrite history. You know, is it just a great example of how far away he's slipped from the day-to-day concerns of Americans? He had, you know, a recent quote asked about inflation and, you know, talked about it like it was a good thing, and, you know, he loves inflation and doesn't care what people are up against. This is really, as I said, taking a bad political situation and seeing what you can do to make it worse.
And Chad, I think that whole "I love inflation" quote, the president circled back and said what he meant was, hey, I love that it's going to come down so quickly after we get the war in Iran resolved and some of these other things. Chad, do you think that resolution that I just referenced is something Republicans in Congress want to take up?
They want to stay as far away as they possibly can from that. There are certainly, again, his loyalists in safe Republican seats who might be happy to do his bidding. But when I talk about the actual legislative priorities of something that would chew up a lot of floor time, would be tremendously controversial, that's going to be a question. The one thing I would caution, though, you know, you talk about that soundbite that we're going to hear over and over again that the Democrats are going to propound this fall. I love inflation. We have to see where inflation goes. If they actually have a peace deal here with Iran, the devil will be in the details. We don't know any of the details right now. If hostilities were to kick back up, you know, right now, oil, you know, is down. The market is up at this news over the past 36 hours. That's good for the president. I don't know that that fixes all their political problems, but it certainly helps. And maybe that gets them into a place in the fall where they're in a good spot. But if this continues or there's another flare-up or something else, then that's going to be an issue over and over again. And that's why some Republicans are like, hey, maybe we can get past the war and say, look, inflation is down, gas prices are down, and maybe run on that, even though it was created by the president moving into Iran in the first place.
Chad, David just mentioned the ballroom that's being built under President Trump's direction. What about the administration's $220 million provision in the reconciliation bill for security for that new ballroom? Talk about that and how that's playing out in Congress.
Well, again, there is security in that, but you know, they stayed away specifically from the ballroom, and that was, you know, one of the controversies in getting that bill done. Now, will there be a push if they try to do another so-called reconciliation bill here? You're certainly going to have Democrats have a field day with that. And the reason this is important, the reason I keep using this phrase reconciliation, because that is the special budget process that they use. And when you use that special process, reconciliation, and the reason they use it is so they can avoid a filibuster. So you can pass something with just a simple majority and not a supermajority. You don't need 60 votes to break a filibuster. The problem is that you have this open amendment process in the Senate, a votorama, as it's called here on Capitol Hill. And so you could imagine maybe some Republican senators who are vulnerable wanting to have votes on things saying, OK, no money for the ballroom or no money for the weaponization fund, and certainly Democrats on that front. And that's why even entering into that other type of bill gets to be a problem, because you get everybody out there, they weaponize these votes, and then you can see, they can say, well, can you imagine, you know, at 2:30 in the morning on this roll call vote, so-and-so voted for or against that, or you force them to take a position. And that's what happens when they get into these votoramas. It's not so much about getting something done. It's about documenting what your opponent has done, because you can make them take that challenging vote in that votorama.
We got a call from Matt who wanted to know about the race between sitting Senator John Husted and former Senator Sherrod Brown, and what you all think about how that's going to shape up. David, I'll let you go first on that.
Well, this is a really interesting dynamic for Senator Husted, because he's tied himself to Trump so closely in the latter stages of his career that there's almost no room for him to improve his situation beyond what Trump allows. You know, he has actively supported the war against Iran and actively supported every Trump policy. All these votes that we're talking about and issues, you know, that Chad has mentioned, where the Congress has tried to rein Trump in a bit, Husted has been with Trump on everything. So it's an interesting political situation. He's going to rise or fall with Trump. And in Ohio, that had been a good bet for a long time. But Trump's numbers are soft in Ohio. And the problems, you know, that we've been talking about affect Ohio as much or more than the average state. So it does set up an interesting referendum. I think what we've seen very clearly in the polls, you know, the Republican dominance of Ohio has gone out the window. That's not there in 2026, setting this up to be a very close race and really something of a referendum on Trump, sort of old school Democratic politics represented by Sherrod Brown versus Trump, essentially on the ballot in November.
Anything you want to add to that, Chad?
Yeah, and Sherrod Brown, if you look at his voting record or his electoral record, he has always done really well in Democratic years. He became a senator in 2006, 2012, 2018. You know, he got hit by the Trump car, when the president won Ohio by about 10 points in 2010. But, you know, if you look at conventional wisdom and how things usually work in a midterm, this would be, probably a midterm year. And again, John Husted's fate probably hinges on the president. I mean, Bernie Moreno won because he was attached to the president. It worked out for him. Sherrod Brown largely lost. He was the chair of the banking committee, you might remember, and that the cryptocurrency industry put an unprecedented $40 million against him to take out the chairman of the banking committee because he opposed crypto. Those factors aren't in play this year. So that might, turn in favor of Sherrod Brown. And by the way, I should add just one historical footnote. We were talking about expunging the impeachment of the president. You know, they censured President Andrew Jackson back in the 1830s. And in 1834, the Senate actually voted to expunge the censure. And if you look in the record, there's a little box drawn around the censure of Jackson, and it says expunged by the Senate. So they've done this before. I don't know if they'll actually get a little handwritten box around something in the congressional record, but that's how they did it, back in 1834.
Well, Chad, you were on the call. You were doing play-by-play for the congressional baseball game last week. There are so many different congressional competitions these days, sports competitions between Democrats and Republicans. It's supposed to be all about bipartisanship. How's that working out?
Well, it is a nice night where they bring everybody out to the ballpark. They play at Nats Park. It's treated like a regular, Major League Baseball game. We air it on FS1. We get the same production crew as they do for the World Series and the playoffs. And, people get along, and there's some bipartisanship and camaraderie. They raise more than $3.2 million for charity. But there is a congressional baseball game now, a congressional soccer game, a congressional basketball game, a congressional hockey game, a congressional flag football game. So we're at an all-time high of congressional sports and probably an all-time low at bipartisanship. So, while this is all high-minded and probably, well-intentioned, I'm not sure that it fosters bipartisanship when it comes to legislation. Just look at the track record here in the House and Senate.
Well, I've been talking with Fox News chief congressional correspondent Chad Pergram and University of Cincinnati professor of political science David Niven. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Up next, the newly approved active ingredient for sunscreen in the U.S. Are you ready to slather it on? This is Cincinnati Edition.